Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Smith & Jones. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Fresh content every Thursday on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and your favorite podcast platform, Google, Apple, Spotify, or otherwise. Download, subscribe, rate, review, and share. And I think you're going to want to share this one this week because, well, this guy's all over Twitter / X, Instagram, YouTube as well. I mean, you've probably heard him on other podcasts. You've definitely heard him on big-time podcasts that he was a part of in the past as well as a co-host on the Starters podcast and on the Starters on NBA TV and the No Dunks podcast. But now he is a globetrotter. Not a Harlem globetrotter, but he is hopscotching all over the world for the last year and a half, trying to play 20 pickup games in 20 cities in 20 countries. Well, he's hitting that right now in Brazil, so now it's on to maybe, I don't know, 20 more. As we bring into the conversation Lee Ellis, and Lee, just maybe I'll start real plain and simple. How the heck did this idea start?
Yeah, well, I guess it goes back to sort of just the roots of playing basketball. You know, when you're a kid, you just start playing and you love the game and you play with your friends and you get a lot of social interaction out of it. And that's what it was for me. And then I was obviously on NBA TV for 6 seasons. I was doing the podcast at The Athletic as well. And then, you know, when COVID hit, we were all sort of shut down for a while, didn't really know what was going on. And then after my wife and I got vaccinated, we decided, you know what, let's get out. Let's go traveling again. Let's, you know, try to live a normal life again, a normal existence. And so we went over to Europe and I was actually in Berlin. And it was a Sunday afternoon. We were having lunch and I was just walking through a park called Mauer Park. And there was these guys playing basketball. And I just joined in. I just sort of pointed to them and, you know, the body language, the communication there, you sort of, you know, you just kind of like make those little gestures of like, can I join in? And they said, yeah. And so I started playing. And my son, who was 8 or 9 at the time, he started filming it. And afterwards, I put these clips up on my Instagram page. And I didn't really put them up for any reason. It's not like I was out there crossing guys over like Kyrie Irving or anything like that. I was just playing to have fun. And I got tons of messages from people all around the world just saying, hey, man, if you're ever in my city, if you're ever in my country, come on out and play. I'd love to show you around. I'd love to show you the court. I'd love to take you around the city. We love basketball here. It's a really big cultural thing. And I didn't think too much of it. But then the following summer, we went traveling again. And I started putting these messages on social media on my Instagram story saying, hey, I'm going to be in, you know, Rome or Barcelona. If anyone knows about a game or a run I can join, let me know. But I really want it to be an outdoor court as well because I really like outdoor courts more than indoor courts because I think the outdoor courts give you, you know, a completely different perspective of like it, sometimes you can tell immediately where somebody is just based on the court they're playing on. And so I was in Barcelona and I started playing. This guy sent me a message and said, come to Barcelona. And so I went and played there. And the same thing, I put these clips up on my Instagram and I just got flooded with messages from people all around the world, you know, from China and Brazil and, you know, Africa and, you know, countries and continents like that. And so it's sort of the idea kind of like forced itself on me in a way because my wife, I was talking to her and I said, I wonder if I could, you know, go around the world and play basketball and maybe turn this into a docu-series that hopefully ends up on Netflix or somewhere like that. And my wife was incredibly supportive of the idea. And again, I think with COVID, you know, it sort of changed our way of thinking and living in so many ways that I thought, if I'm going to do this, I just have to literally go and do it. You know, you can't sort of think about it for too long. You can't plan it for too long. You just got to try to make whatever it is happen, go out and happen. And so I decided to leave the podcast behind with the No Dunks guys and sort of dive into this head first, not really knowing exactly how it was going to come together, but taking a few chances, taking people up on their offers and invitations. And I took off about 17 months ago. I think I left November 2022 was the first country I played in, which was Germany. And here I am 17 months later in Brazil at country number 20. And it's the original target was to get 20 countries in. But now that I'm here and I've got so many open invitations and offers out there, I'm just going to keep on going as long as I can sort of sustain this. And hopefully, as I said before, at some point get this on a Netflix or a Apple TV, Amazon, somewhere like that, to turn it into a full-on documentary-style series.
Wow. Lee, I don't know where to start. I mean, just the logistics in terms of getting from place A to B with your family and accommodations and like, you know, did you end up ever end up sleeping on the court at the place when you played when it got dark? I mean, it's just mind-boggling. Tell us, I have more basketball questions per se, but just tell us a little bit about the logistics of this accommodation, travel. Like, maybe you took the train, maybe you took a donkey. I don't know. How did you get from A to B?
Well, sometimes I've taken buses depending on where I'm going, if it's some of those European cities that are close together. But for the most part, when people invite me to their city and country, I ask them if you can have a local brand or a sponsor to help finance it and fund it. Because obviously that's what it comes down to. I haven't got endless resources financially, but I try to incorporate brands and you know, companies that want to be a part of it and to sponsor the trip. And I've had some success with that, not complete success as far as every destination, but most of them, and the more that I've done them, I'm getting stronger in that sort of business perspective, that I'm actually able to now put together like a little sales pitch. I circulate that around to the people who are inviting me to the countries and the cities, and we can often get someone on board to help support it. But I will say as well, just one clarification, my family doesn't travel with me to all of these places. It's I'm still technically a businessman out there trying to make it all happen myself. So, you know, it's been really good. And what often happens as well in these cities, I have appearances on local media, whether it's TV or podcasts or magazines or whatever it is. So there's a lot of promotion, and it really gives the cities an opportunity to promote their own basketball culture. And in some cases, their courts, or if there's an event, or an activity that's going on. And so I think people now who have seen me do this are starting to see that I'm able to like promote this into an event where the city gets a lot of opportunity and exposure for basketball in their place. And it's really good. It's bringing so many people together. It's boys and girls. It's men and women. There's no skill level requirement. It's not like you have to be a certain type of player. It's like, if you want to play and have fun, you can come out and join one of my runs. And I've also contacted several NBA teams and other various partners who have donated merchandise like T-shirts and jerseys and shoes and things like that. And I always give those away as prizes. So when people turn up to my runs, you might walk away with a brand new hardwood classic Mitchell and Ness jersey, a pair of Jordans, a basketball from EuroLeague. So I've got lots of things that I'm able to contribute and leave behind. So it's not just me turning up and playing and then leaving. I'm hoping that the people come out, have a really, really fun experience.
So Lee, much like Jonesy, plenty of basketball related questions as well, but just from a business perspective as well, what's the crew like then that you've got? I mean, I assume it's not just you, especially if someone's filming these and you're hoping to put this in a documentary, but I've also got to imagine that if you're also trying to be budget conscious and cost conscious, that you probably are doing a ton of work yourself as well, or relying on other people to hold your phone or shoot a camera and whatnot. So how logistically are you kind of piecing it all together off the court with the filming of the action that's happening on the court and whatnot?
Well, for the most part, it is really just me offering my phone to someone who's at the run to say, hey, can you just film this stuff? Or I also speak to the people who are helping me organize and say, yeah, just saying to people, hey, bring someone who can shoot on their phone or whatever device they've got, and then they can upload that footage to a Google Drive doc and share that with me, and then I put it all together myself. Because I would love to have a camera crew, a producer, an editor, and all that. But again, logistically, financially, I just don't have the means to do that. So instead, I just have to try to create what I can with what I've got. And that's part of the challenge, too. It was, it's kind of fun. Like in Istanbul, I was playing, and it was an early morning run. It was like 9 o'clock in the morning on a Thursday. And I was out there for a EuroLeague commitment. And so I put together a run while I was there. And the guy who helped me organize it, I said to him, is there anyone you know who can come along and shoot it? And he said it's 9 o'clock in the morning and it's going to be tough. He said, I'll bring my wife along. And I said, that's like anyone will do. Anyway, his wife at the time was on a Zoom call with her work and she was shooting our game at the same time. So she was working the two cameras at work filming our game. And I didn't know how it was going to look, but I managed to put something together. And that's ultimately what it's about for me, is like just make anything happen. at this point, I'm just trying to hopefully persuade, you know, one of these streaming services to see that I've got the proof of concept. Now I just need a little bit more, you know, financial resources and you know, editorial resources behind me to really blow this out and turn it into a series. And I'm pleased to say that I've gotten, you know, quite a few encouraging messages from people in different fields saying that they can see what I'm doing, they like what I'm doing, and, you know, if I can continue to do it, then there is a possibility I'll be able to get someone on board at some point to help me really, you know, turn this into what I'm hoping it becomes.
Well, that is so awesome. I guess for me, I want to get to the game now itself. And I have traveled the world and ended up in pickup games in different parts of the world. And I love what you said earlier about the body language and the universal language of basketball when there's somebody open and, you know, like you, if you don't speak the language, you cry out, you whistle, you woohoo, like here I am. Where have you found it? It's probably easy to fit in everywhere, but where have you found it maybe the easiest or maybe the most, give me the top knowledgeable pickup runs in terms of people understanding the game and how you, on the pickup court, you share the game. You're playing together. Your goal is to win, even though, you know, we always say in the NBA, if they were playing in the schoolyard, they'd figure it out. And you'd know who you were picking.
Right.
How has that been in you know, in your travels?
Yeah, I got a really good early lesson in Slovenia, actually, because I'd organized a run there at Luka Doncic's court, which had been renovated a few years ago. And I just assumed there was probably 15 guys turned up, and I just assumed we would play 5-on-5 full court run. You know, and that's what sort of traditionally happens in North America. But when I said that to the guys, they're like, no one here plays 5-on-5 full court. It's all 3-on-3 half court stuff. That's how they play their pickup basketball. Now, they adjusted for me. They said, fine, we'll play 5-on-5, but nobody does that even in the Balkans. And what I learned is that 3-on-3 half court basketball is probably the better format for pickup because it keeps everybody involved all the time. Even on defense, you're involved in the player all the time. I'm sure you guys know, especially, you know, from playing basketball pickup yourself, sometimes 5-on-5, you might go 5 to 10 possessions without even touching the ball. You know, that doesn't move around a whole lot. There's a lot of 1-on-1 stuff. But when it's 3-on-3, that ball just keeps on moving. And when you look at guys like Nikola Jokic and Luka Doncic and going back further, Stojakovic and Divac, these guys just knew how to pass and move and play. They weren't necessarily the best athletes as far as, you know, the muscliest and they could jump the highest and run the fastest. But they just knew how to be in the right position, you know, make the right play, make the right pass. And I think you're seeing that at the grassroots level in the Balkans. If you look at Serbia, for example, there's only been 8 3-on-3 world championships. They've won 6 of them. And having now been and played in Belgrade and in Serbia, I understand why they're so successful because they really focus on the fundamentals of the game first, rather than necessarily being, again, like who's the fastest over 40 meters or 100 meters. It's like learn how to pass, learn how to move, learn how to cut, and then learn how to finish. So, you know, that was a really, really encouraging lesson for me to see like, okay, this is how they play here. Now, when I was in Kenya and South Africa, I would say athletically, those guys were on a lot of a different level than they were in the Balkans. These guys were throwing down sometimes dunks in transition. And I'm like, all right, I'm not quite at that level. I'm just out here to play to have fun. But you can see in parts of Africa, the thing that is missing out there is the infrastructure. They don't have the courts. They don't have the balls. They don't have, you know, shoes and things like that. So it was a lot harder for people in Africa to just have enough courts to play on to really hone their skills. But there's certainly no question of the athleticism and the passion and the desire to play. It's just they don't have the facility. So all these things I'm learning along the way as to why certain regions have certain standards for basketball. And again, if you look at the NBA, you see guys like Embiid, Pascal Siakam, of course, you know, succeeding in the NBA. And this is where a lot of those guys started their journey, just playing in the streets, playing with their kids. Some of them made it through to the elite level of the world. And I think now the access that people have to following the NBA, League Pass, etc., things like that, kids in parts of Africa are really seeing that maybe they can make it as well. It's just, it would be so awesome if they just had better facilities, more facilities, better coaching, better training, and just the ability to really work on their skills and their passion for the game, because there's no question they've got the talent. That's obvious to see, boys and girls.
Hey, Lee, I remember going back, if I'm not mistaken, it was at least a month ago, might have been 2 months ago now. Heck, I almost forget that we're almost into the middle of March. But a couple months ago when you were on with Ernie Johnson and Charles Barkley on their podcast, and I believe Charles, maybe it was Ernie who brought this up, I'm not sure. But either way, you and I think, are about the same age. I might be a year or two older than you, but you're in your mid to late 40s, from Australia. You show up in certain countries. You got this middle-aged white guy with an Australian accent showing up to hoop. The cool thing that I find, and I didn't play anywhere near the level that Jonesy did or that any pros did or whatnot, you talk about the language of basketball, but just the sport itself and the unwritten language as well, where it doesn't matter what size you are, doesn't matter necessarily what color you are, doesn't matter where you were from, doesn't matter if you're rich or you're poor, if you're on the court and you can play or you enjoy the sport, you love the sport, it's just the camaraderie of the game itself and being a teammate and being a part of a team. And that, to me, is the unwritten language, quote-unquote, in itself as well. Do you find that when you're going around the globe to all these different pockets and populations and race, creed, whatever, does not matter, and it's just the game itself?
Oh, that's absolutely it. Like, I never step on the court and say, you know, who's your favorite player, what's your politics, what's your... None of that stuff matters, okay? When you're on the court, if you want to play and have fun, then that's what it's all about. And there was one time I was in Belgrade at the fantastic courts in Kalemegdan Park there, and I wasn't planning on playing. I was wearing jeans and a sweater. And there were these three guys who were playing a little bit of basketball, you know, a little bit of one-on-one with each other. And as soon as they saw me, they just kind of pointed to me and I pointed to them. And they were like, basically, they were like, we need one more player to make it 2-on-2. Now, I assumed these guys were Serbian. I mean, I was in Serbia, I was in Belgrade. It turns out they were Russian. And they didn't, one guy spoke a little bit of English, the other guys didn't really speak at all. But again, it was like, okay, 2-on-2. Let's just play. And so very quickly, that chemistry and that language of like, okay, I'm going to set a screen. You're going to run around here. You're going to take a shot. If you make the shot, then maybe the defense collapses on you a bit and I'll roll to the rim on the next one and you pass it to me and we score. And so you don't need to know anyone's name. You don't need to discuss these things. Basketball itself becomes the way that you communicate. And you know, again, you guys have played and you see so much basketball. Like, how much basketball is about just little raising of the eyebrows and nodding of the head, you know, tilting of the head, just to sort of say, I'm going to be going here. And you see that, of course, with players who have been together for so long. We always talk about chemistry, you know, about, you know, that continuity over years can sometimes outweigh, you know, talent, because guys just know how to play with each other. And so it's so cool how when you step on a court, you both can, you know, very quickly understand what the goal is, which is to try to win the game, but it's not life or death by any means. But you very quickly try to find which strengths you have, which weaknesses your teammate has, and then you work on those and you play together and you form that, like, that shared experience. It's kind of like when you have a meal with people you don't know. You sort of get to know each other, and afterwards you feel just a little bit closer. And speaking of a meal, quite often after I play, I will have a beer or a coffee or something to eat with some people, and then you start to, you know, then you start to chat a little bit and you learn a bit more about each other. But that initial interaction starts on the basketball court, just playing, having fun, and ultimately, you know, again, doesn't matter where you're from, because basketball next to soccer, I think, is the biggest sport in the world, because you don't need too much equipment. You don't need anything other than really a hoop and a ball, and then you can go out there and play and have fun. And so it's a really great way of, when you're traveling, just to feel localized, you know, like, oh, people, I turned up here, no one said, hey, you're not from here, you can't play. Instead, it's the opposite. It's like, you want to play? Jump in the game and let's see what you got. And it's so much fun. It's also really fun seeing. I think basketball is really an artistic sport for creators. And by that I mean, I love seeing people when they've got like a really cool handle or they've got some move or whatever it is, they love to go out and express that. And it is an expression of themselves. There was a guy I played with in Tokyo who just had the best handles and the best finishes as well. And Japan is not a country we traditionally associate with basketball, but this guy just loved the game. He loved Steph Curry. He talked about that. But again, it was all kind of, it wasn't a smooth conversation we had afterwards in English, in the English language. But he just told me about what he loved, and then he went out there and played, and you could just see the passion in his game. And we're now friends on Instagram. I send him a few messages, and it's cool that we've now created a friendship and a bond simply from playing basketball that we didn't know each other until we stepped on the court together.
Yeah, Lee, I totally feel you on that, because I've had that same experience in other countries, not speaking the language. And when you get to the competitive side of it, are you able to find people that have played at a high level and still aren't there, but are still very competitive and love it? And, you know, you get talking and you find out with them after. And the other part of it is, where have you found it maybe the most competitive? I mean, everybody's a weekend warrior. Everybody, you know, has their own kind of moves that they stole from somebody in the NBA or a college game or something. But where have you found it the most competitive? And have you run into anybody that's like, wow, this guy played professionally here, or this guy was a top player there, or anything of that sort?
Well, Matt Bonner turned up to my run in Toronto, and I wasn't expecting that, but he turned up, and he wasn't just there signing autographs and taking selfies. He went out and played, and it was great to see that even for a guy who's an NBA champion, a legend, he's loved across the NBA, but once he stepped on the court, you know, I mean, look, he obviously wasn't going at his top speed there. He could have, you know, destroyed the competition if he wanted to, but he still played at a competitive level where it was like, I'm not out here to lose. I still want to play to win. And so it was great to have him. And in Croatia, I had Damian Rudej, the former NBA player, who actually organized the run, and he played. Now, he's only 33, so he's still a little bit younger. He has retired from professional basketball, but you can still see that these guys, if they choose to, they can just decide, right, I'm just going to take over the game here. There's nothing any normal guy can do to stop it. But ultimately, for guys like Rudej and Bonner, I still just saw them competing, having fun. Again, like it was for me as a kid, and like for all of us who grow up just playing a sport we love, you do it mainly for fun at the start, you know, and as you get a little bit older, you get a bit more competitive, you want to, you know, you want to become professional, but most of us don't go that route. Instead, you just still play for fun and for recreation. And again, for me, the game of basketball has brought so much to my life beyond just scoring points and grabbing rebounds. It's the social interaction. It's the way you meet people. It's the way you have fun. And now traveling. I would say, going back to your question, Jonesy, as well, in Kenya, I played in it was an organized run. They have a tournament every Friday night in Nairobi. It was actually on the Giants of Africa court in Umoja 2, which is beside the Ujiri Foundation, of course, that put it all together. And so this was a little more organized than just a traditional pickup run. Like, they had teams and had referees and scoring and all that sort of stuff. But again, Kenya, of the countries in Africa, we don't immediately associate with basketball. But man, this one was competitive and physical, but fun. Like, there was no one was taking it easy on me. I was obviously the only foreigner who was playing that night. But there was no one like, well, let's go easy on this guy. We want him to, you know, we don't want to hurt him. We don't want him to not want to come back. But instead, I felt like, man, they were playing defense on me. But I felt like a local. And that, to me, was what was really special about the experience. There was no special treatment. Instead, it was like, all right, you're playing. Well, we're going to treat you like we treat everyone else out here. And again, some of these guys were putting back, like, put back dunks, you know, in transition. And I'm just like,
that's,
man,
so cool.
These guys are just incredible athletic. And on top of that, it was mixed competition. So we had a minimum of one girl on each team who had to be on the court at each time. So there was like maybe two or three others on the bench. And that's what made it feel really communal as well. Like, there were families coming out there, you know, parents with their kids, friends. And then it was really inclusive of everyone who wanted to play basketball, got to have a run and got to have some fun. And so It was a great experience in such a special court there. What the Giants of Africa have done, and I hope to explore more courts throughout the continent at some point, but that one there, particularly in Nairobi, is really, really special. It was under lights as well because, I mean, it was baking hot during the day, so it wasn't really fun to play when the heat was so intense during the afternoon. But at night, it was great. The lights were on, and it was such a meeting point for the locals as well, where they could go to a really high-quality court, play, have fun, and have that experience. And then for me to actually play there as well was just really, really special. And again, as I said, the fact that they treated me like a local made it even more, you know, pleasing that there was just like you were welcomed by the community. And so it was really, really special and so much fun.
So Lee, you kind of lead me perfectly to where I wanted to go with this one as well. And Jonesy, I don't know if I've at some point, we've been working together for so many damn years, I must have said this to you at some point. But Lee, I've long held, at least in Canada, and I know you've lived in this country, so you know what I'm talking about. It seems like with hockey, it doesn't necessarily matter what your skill level is. And the reason I mention that is whether you're playing road hockey, whether you're playing on the ice in a pickup game, in a game of shinny, whatever, it's like, whatever. It's just, it's in your blood. Oh, you can play hockey. And if you get a member of the media, a broadcaster, a writer, somebody like yourself that shows up to play a game, I almost feel like in this country, it's like, whatever. If he doesn't need to be a guy that just narrowly missed the NHL. It doesn't matter if he's kind of a crappy player. Who cares? He loves the sport. But in basketball, man, if you can't play or if you show up to a court and you're a guy that works in basketball or you cover the game or you're even surrounding the game in any way, shape, or form and you can't play to at least some degree, you are going to get like catcalled and booed and razzed off the court. You are going to get your balls busted big time. So I kind of like hearing that you're being treated as one of the regulars, but at the same time, I got to assume you got a little game here. So, like, did you play a ton in high school in Australia? Or, like, where did your skill set develop? Because I've seen the videos, too. You got a better stroke than I do. You've got a pretty good jumper. So where did that all develop for you?
Yeah, I mean, again, just through playing pickup throughout my whole life, you know, with friends and in high school and then adult leagues. And then, of course, living in Toronto for 9 years, I played quite a bit of pickup there. Well, I became a father just over 10 years ago. And so that was probably the period in my life for the first 5 years of being a father where I didn't play as much because, I mean, any parent knows those first few years are pretty chaotic. Yeah. You've got to be, it's all hands on deck. So once my boys sort of, you know, started going to school, then I was able to start playing a bit more. But I guess for me, I mean, you know, I have always been able to shoot. And I think that's one thing that sort of sustains you on the pickup court because the athleticism leaves all of us, you know. And so I'm not beating anyone off the dribble these days. I haven't got too many crossovers in my bag or anything like that. But if you leave me open on the three-point line, I can knock down a shot. And so, you know, that's where I try to make myself effective. I mean, you mentioned my age earlier there, Eric. We're, you know, mid to late 40s. I think we can say that. So I'm not stepping in the lane to take charges or anything like that on the defensive end either. I'm just trying to sort of basically defend the perimeter and then play from the perimeter and also try to make a few right passes because that's the other way to make friends when you're on the road. If you pass the ball well and some guy makes a shot, you pretty quickly become, you know, you're pretty comfortable with that person. If you just turn up to a court, as I'm sure you guys know as well, if you're the new guy on a court and you just turn up and start firing away and then you start missing, well, you pretty quickly rub the locals up the wrong way by doing that. So I just try to make a few passes, hit the shots when I'm open, and fortunately, the shot is something that I have sort of, it has sustained as I've gotten a little bit older in life. And I think, you know, you always see like, you know, Ray Allen and Larry Bird, you know, legendary Reggie Miller, you see him on Instagram. They've still got the shot. They haven't got the speed anymore, haven't quite got the same moves. But if you've had a shot and it sort of carried you throughout your life, you can generally at least knock down an open shot if you get a couple in a game. And that to me is where I've been able to at least earn my keep out on the court. It's like I can hit a three every now and again. You know, I might not be the quickest guy out there. I'm not out there blocking anyone's shots or anything like that. But I can still knock down the shot if I get the opportunity.
Well, as they say, Lee, it's like riding a bike. So I guess last one kind of for me here. What did you learn? I mean, we all love this game, and to me, it's it's at the top of my list. It's not the only game in the world, but to me, it's the greatest game in the world because it transcends so much, as Eric talked about. Like, you know, Eric has met him. I have a really good friend that he is the polar opposite of me. A white guy from Kentucky, and we met on a court playing pickup ball 40 years ago, and we're still really good friends now. And what did you learn, Lee? Like, we knew some of this, but there has to have been something that you said, wow, this really surprised me, or wow, I had no idea about fill in the blank.
You know, I think basketball for me is like a friend who's just always there with you, you know, and it's like, so when I turn up to these cities and countries, if I've got a ball or there's already a ball there, I sort of feel like that friend is the one who, you know, we've all got that friend who just seems to know people. You know, it's almost a bit like Kramer in a way. You know, it's like he just makes things, like he breaks the ice. And I think that's what I have felt with basketball. It's like if I'm on the court, then I don't have to think of something to talk about or try to make conversation. It's like basketball does the talking, and it goes back to the original, you know, sort of thing. Basketball is the language. And I think the other thing for me, I find basketball is like my sanctuary. It's almost like meditation in a lot of ways, because I can go out on the court. If I'm having a bad day or, you know, things aren't going well, I often find shooting around for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, it sort of clears your mind. And basketball, a little bit like soccer, it's one of those things where you can have a good workout by yourself. You know, you can work on your shot when you're by yourself. You can work on your handles. You can work on your moves. You can do all this stuff by yourself without needing anybody else there. There's not many sports that you can do that with. And you know, it doesn't matter if you love another sport. But, for example, baseball, I imagine it's a little bit harder to have that sort of interaction because you tend to need someone else there. You know, same with maybe, you know, football or other sports where, you know, you can't sort of just go out there and be on that court and really compete with yourself or against yourself. And I know that because going back to being a shooter, I think part of the reason I'm still able to shoot is that when I go on the court, you know, I'm trying to knock in 3 in a row and then 4 in a row and 5 in a row. And if you miss a couple, you're sort of like, right, I've got to lock back in here and I've got to work on it. And I know I can make these shots. I've just got to focus again on getting the shot right. And so I think that's where, again, basketball for me, It's like that friend. And do you remember Michael Jordan wrote a letter to basketball when he retired, and he talked about how basketball was always there for him, and it was always kept him disciplined, it kept him honest. And I remember reading that, and I'm like, I feel the same way. Look, I'm not obviously comparing myself to Michael as a player, but in terms of the passion and the love for the game, I think it's the same for all of us who grow up wanting to be a star in their particular sport. You can love the game as much, you just maybe can't reach the same levels as a professional athlete. But ultimately, that's where I feel for me. Like, basketball is like this sport that always keeps me sort of on track. It keeps me disciplined. It keeps me honest. But I can have fun. I can compete. And now, as I say, I'm getting to sort of explore the world, meet new people, and play on these incredible courts. And it just sort of keeps on offering me these new experiences. And I really, really sort of love to, you know, take them on and learn from them. And then again, if I can turn this into a career, then it'd be like basketball will have carried me through all facets of life, from being a kid as a player, you know, loving the game, as a professional in the NBA media circuit for over a decade, to now potentially something even further in my career. And that's what motivates me, that's what inspires me, and that's what makes me feel that I'm on a path to somewhere. I'm not sure exactly where it's going to lead, but that's, you know, I never imagined as well as a kid growing up in Australia that one day I would have been on NBA TV having a show, but it happened, and there was no way of knowing it at the time, but it was a matter of just taking chances, trying things and finding, you know, taking opportunities as they presented.
Lee, last question for me, or for us, I guess. And in fact, I'm going to answer it for you and then ask it in a different way. I've got to assume, based on listening to you for the last half hour, that you have absolutely no regrets going back and making this decision. But it's got to be wild for some people to think, as you just said, and you've mentioned a couple times, a guy that that had a show on NBA TV that had a very popular, well-known podcast that was picked up by NBA TV, that you were then part of the No Dunks podcast as well, and you're making a good living and you've got a good life, to leave that behind, to take a chance on going around the world playing basketball, again, I'm going to answer your question. You don't regret it. However, now that you've fulfilled the 20 and you're looking at 5 more, 10 more, 20 more, 30 more, whatever it could be, is there anything you would like to do differently or do in addition to what you've already done as you look to, again, this, let's say, the next 20 and continuing to forge forward with this? Anything you want to tweak or do differently or change moving forward with this whole campaign, this whole process?
Yeah, well, what I have learned is originally it was about playing basketball, and now, again, speaking and consulting with people in the cities and the countries I'm in, I'm like, let's organize clinics for kids. Let's do something so that the kids who love basketball get an opportunity to see someone who they may recognize from TV or from the social media world who's coming there to help them learn to play the game, to love the game. And so that's what really inspires me now, is that I insist on the host. I say, when we have a clinic, make sure it's as close to 50-50 boys and girls as we can, and let's have a court, and let's get some local sponsors to maybe contribute some T-shirts or balls or what, or, you know, and I come along with nets as well and things like that. So I try to leave that behind so that, again, so people seeing what I'm doing, it's not just an ego trip of, hey, watch me play basketball. It's more about what I'm doing to help leave behind something so that the people in the cities that I'm in, they actually get real tangible benefit out of it. And so those are the sorts of things that I would really love to capture and tell those stories of a lot more, because I think that's a lot more appealing to a wider audience. It's not just for basketball fans. It's for people who see, hey, you're actually making a contribution in these other cities and countries. I'm actually going to be in a favela here, which is a slum city here in Sao Paulo in the next couple of days, hosting a clinic there that they've put that together, the people who helped me arrange this whole trip. And so that is very, very exciting for me, that I'm going to go and really share what basketball has given me. Hopefully that people who see this and they participate in the clinic, they're like, man, I love basketball. Maybe I can turn this into my career as well. And so, you know, as terms of regrets, I mean, no, I don't have any regrets, because when I left the No Dunks podcast, one of the things I said in the last episode I was on, I said, the biggest fear I have is not trying this and not knowing how it was going to turn out. I didn't want to just sort of take the easy option, despite obviously the financial safety and security and career and things like that. But I felt it was really important for me to, hey, you've got an idea. There's no way of possibly knowing how it's going to happen until you do it. And now here I am, nearly 18 months in, feeling more sort of empowered and inspired to keep on going, because I feel that there is an audience out there. It's just now whether or not I'm able to parlay that into a sustainable career. And if I am, great. And if I'm not, then it's not a waste of time anyway, because I've learned so much, I've grown so much, and I just believe, you know, in life that you just have to try these things without putting the metric or the measurement of like, it's only worth it if it succeeds in the ultimate goal. I just don't think that's the way to approach it. I think you try these things, you go for it. If you are able to convert it into a career, then great. But if not, it still makes it worth it, because I just think that's, you know, we sort of often look at life as success and failure, and it's black and white like that. I don't believe in those sorts of things. I believe, like, you try and you try and you try, and you live with the consequences no matter what, because ultimately, you know, we have less control over these things than we think anyway. But if you give it your best shot and you try everything you can, then at least you know, you can be honest with yourself that you've given it your best shot and you can live with the results. I mean, I think you only have to look at the basketball analogy. I mean, Steph Curry in Atlanta a few weeks ago had 60 points in a loss. Now, does that 60 points mean that was a bad game by him? Of course not. I mean, it'd be ridiculous to say that, but it just proves that sometimes you can have a really great thing and it doesn't necessarily translate into a win. So you just have to keep on going anyway. And that's where I feel I am right now.
Lee, we really appreciate you joining us. It's a great story. It's a great cause. It's a great path you're on, and wish you all the success and all the best in the next 20 and beyond.
Fantastic stuff, Lee.
Real pleasure talking to you guys.
That again was Lee Ellis. Fabulous conversation, Jonesy, and what a story it is. Again, it's less than 2 years old, and he originally started out wanting to do 20 pickup games in 20 cities in 20 countries, and he's already now hitting 20 currently in Brazil. And as we said towards the end there, looking for, heck, another 5, 10, maybe 20-plus more. But it's such a fabulous idea, and it's just kind of thrilling to watch from a distance, you know, whether it be on Twitter, X, on Instagram, on YouTube, whatever. It's just so cool what he's doing right now, Jonesy.
Yeah, it is, Eric. And I mean, kind of a basketball person's dream, right? Like, you know, we always talk about the game taking you all over the world. What could be more apt and apropos than this? Like literally traveling the world to play the game in an unstructured environment. It's not like you're with a team and things are planned out and there's a tournament and you have a finite start and ending. So there's a part of me that's a little bit green with envy. Like how cool is that to be able to do all that? And I mean, at this stage in my life, I probably couldn't do anything but run from 3-point line to 3-point line and be that guy that he talked about jacking it up. But, you know, I'd make a pass here or there. But, you know, the point is that he put it well. It's a friend to basketball. And I feel the same way. It's been a friend since, you know, I was introduced to the game by a guy who drove a taxi for a living and coached kids in Parks and Rec back in the early 70s. And, you know, you and I have both talked about this, and we're fortunate because not all the organizations do it, but we each got a day with the Larry O'Brien trophy. And I had that trophy as many places as I could because there were a whole bunch of people on my basketball journey with me, high school coaches, university coaches, my accountant, like, you know, the dry cleaner, everybody, they were all at some point on the bus with me on my basketball journey. And I wanted them to touch it. And it's made me many friends. It's given me just, you know, an unbelievable ride in life. So I'm there's part of me that's kind of envious of Lee, like, wow, I'd love to be doing that, but good for him. And, boy, if that thing ever does turn into a documentary on, you know, Netflix or Apple TV or Amazon Prime or whatever, you know, I'll be sure to tune in and watch that.
Thanks again to Lee Ellis for joining us this week. And thanks to producer and technical director Austin Mackey. For Paul Jones, I'm Eric Smith. Again, make sure you are subscribed to Smith and Jones wherever you get your podcast, Google, Apple, Spotify, or otherwise. Download, subscribe, rate, and review fresh content every Thursday. And thanks again for tuning in to Smith and Jones.